You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. More often than not, we're here to give advice. The common theme seems to be what to do. Tonight, after we first discussed what is all this about cryptocurrency, we'll get into the legal issues, the promise and problems surrounding this new medium. My guest in the studio tonight, Christopher Cook of Murphy, Cook, Kobrick in San Mateo and Los Angeles. Mr. Cook's practice is focused on representing individuals and businesses in federal regulatory investigations and in parallel civil and criminal proceedings, including investigations and proceedings by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the United States Department of Justice, and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Before starting his law firm, Mr. Cook worked for the Enforcement Division of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission in San Francisco, where he was a branch chief. And B.J. Fadum, from the law offices of B.J. Fadum & Associates, P.C., with offices in San Jose and Santa Rosa. The law offices of B.J. Fadum & Associates, APC, specializes in family law matters. Mr. Fadum has been practicing law since 1985, has been focusing on international domestic matters for over 19 years, including Hague, UCC, JEA, and international jurisdiction. You'll have to tell us what that means. Certified as a specialist in family law by the State Bar of California since 2000, and being a noted published author in various issues of family law, B.J. Fadum is often requested to teach paralegals and attorneys and serves as a mediator, private judge, and a guest on this show. Tonight, there's much to discuss. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of the local dialing area, that is, if you're calling from outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Occasionally, I may neglect to mention that while we're happy to answer all questions, we stop short of giving precise legal advice as we don't have all the facts relating to a given case. We're more than happy to pass along the legal principles that help guide your decision-making. We're not giving investment advice here. We're not giving legal advice. We're happy to give you as much information as possible to help you make those decisions and pass on the principles. And as always, you're free to call regarding any question on the topic of cryptocurrency, related issues. You're not limited to the spot we may be in our conversations. If you have questions, my guest, again, our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. And with that, Chris, BJ, let me welcome you once again to Your Legal Rights.
Thanks, Jeff. Nice to be here again.
Yes, Jeff. Thanks. Nice to be here.
You know, before we go further, let me ask Chris, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what is all this about cryptocurrency? Can you give us an idea what cryptocurrency is?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So cryptocurrency is also called a digital asset. And essentially, it's a medium of exchange that people accept in lieu of what are called fiat currencies, which are like dollars and euros. And it is 10 years old. And it's essentially entries, encrypted entries on a vast database called the blockchain or distributed ledger. The most famous cryptocurrency, the one that's most value, is called Bitcoin. And so essentially, it's a decentralized currency that's not controlled by any government and not backed by any government that people around the world accept as something of value for goods and services.
So I guess my first question is, you know, compared to fiat currency or currency issued by governments, you know, how does this really compare?
Well, there's a couple things. It's cryptocurrencies are essentially unregulated. And some countries have banned them. Some countries have banned just trading in them. But there's no one standing behind your money if it's in a digital wallet, which is typically an app on your smartphone or on a computer that keeps track of your ownership of the cryptocurrency. And so if you lose your computer, if you drop your iPhone and don't have it backed up, you're out of luck, because you have on your phone the device called the digital wallet that has in it what's called a private encryption key, which is a series of symbols that unlocks your entry on this blockchain or distributed ledger or database that people around the world and companies around the world are voluntarily maintaining. So how is it? It's much riskier and it's anonymous. And the reason why a lot of people like it is your transactions are anonymous on if you use the cryptocurrency to pay for things.
It seems a little analogous to the apps we use for other things, like the one for dinner tonight where it never arrived. You know, we're really not connected to the restaurant. It's not their fault. And they try and get a hold of somebody to talk to and say, why didn't it get here? Maybe it didn't get to the station. It went somewhere else. But that's a whole different question. Fiat currency is a bit more simple, easy to understand. I mean, I know that when we're talking money, we may have securities, but more frequently we've got the bank, maybe a safe deposit box or even a safe or the last resort, you know, there's always my wallet. But it's a little more tricky to understand with cryptocurrency. I guess the real question I have to start is, you know, why are people interested?
So I'm seeing it from the standpoint of from family law and domestic matters more and more, especially since I do a lot of the international cases. As Chris was saying, it's very common that these cryptocurrency is used in international transactions. And so we're seeing more, especially in Silicon Valley, where that the compensation for different people that work for international corporations are in cryptocurrency, Bitcoin or other cryptocurrency. So the problem we run into, and people are getting interested in it, is when you get a divorce, it's compensation is community property. It's a community asset. And as Chris said, cryptocurrency is an asset. It's property. How do you divide it? How do you value it? There's a lot of other problems that it runs into when it comes to support and so forth. But basically, a lot of people are getting interested in it. But how do you transact with it? And what is the true value to divide it?
Well, that really begs the ultimate question. What are people doing with it? I mean, know that people are kind of chasing after a buzz as far as getting involved with it. And, you know, that explains why they're interested, in much the way I would think they got involved in the internet back in, you know, the 1990s. There really wasn't any commerce taking place, but it kind of seemed like the place to be. Now there's commerce taking place. People have moved a lot of currency here, but what are they actually doing with it?
Almost all of the transactions are being used for investment speculation. People are buying a cryptocurrency, whether it's Bitcoin, Ether, Ripple, Litecoin. There's a coin called Dogecoin, which I think was originally Doggycoin that someone created. And they're buying it because their Bitcoin itself has gone up in value from pennies 10 years ago when it started to today. Its closing trading price on a coin exchange was $9,300. And it's gone as high as $20,000 per Bitcoin down to, you know, $50. So it goes way up and way down, and a lot of people are buying it for speculation. Some people are buying it because they have transactions that they're engaging with people outside of the U.S. or even within the U.S. that they want to keep anonymous, or because it's an international business transaction and they want to make sure they get paid. Some people are using it in countries like Venezuela where there's hyperinflation and they want to be able to have something that's not going to be worthless as soon as they accept it as a currency. So in that respect, Bitcoin's safer than some fiat currencies if your country's economy is screwed up enough.
But the problem it brings to us and what I see then is when we're looking at it, if they're receiving all or a portion of their compensation in cryptocurrency, using it for transaction. So for example, in California under family law, you have to divide the assets. We've been looking at cryptocurrency more from like it's a stock almost. What's the value when we go to divide it? However, that might be one way to look at it, and we can divide it up. And then, like you said, the value goes up and down, and sometimes the value is speculative. But then if the compensation is in cryptocurrency, we have to establish support, especially child support, which is strictly by guideline. What is the income of the two parties? So you may have one party, the payor, that may even deliberately be asking his employer to be paid mostly in cryptocurrency. And how do you govern what that is to establish what the support is, and then how do you pay it? You can't pay support in Bitcoin because the mother can't go and buy diapers with Bitcoin. It's going to have to be transacted. So that's the problem we're seeing. And we're seeing more and more of it because we're seeing that it's becoming more and more fluent in the Silicon Valley, especially with more of the international corporations coming in.
Do we find that this is growing in the rest of our economy the way it is in Silicon Valley, or is this a local phenomenon?
No, it's growing all over the world. I mean, you have people who are doing what are called initial coin offerings as a means of funding their startup businesses and ventures. You have people, for a while, there were a lot of transactions in cryptocurrencies that weren't speculative as, or for investment speculation as much as they're engaged in illegal or illicit transactions like selling drugs or selling weapons overseas and internationally, and they would accept payment in cryptocurrency because it promised them anonymity. It's impossible to know who the person is who sold that AK-47 to someone when all you have is that they there's an entry on the on the blockchain of a series of symbols that is some person or business out in the world. And that's essentially all you know. So the governments can't – they have a very difficult time in tracing back to who is receiving the cryptocurrencies, especially Bitcoin, which is widely accepted and widely traded. There's a series of other cryptocurrencies, but Bitcoin is by far the most popular one. And it's something like over $100 billion in value right now in Bitcoin out in the world.
$100 billion invested in Bitcoin and no real way for people outside to really see where the money has gone. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we're taking a look at cryptocurrency. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. Again, if you're calling from outside of San Francisco, we'll pick up the freight. Call us at 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on the topic. Again, tonight's topic is cryptocurrency. You're not limited to jump in to the exact point we may be in our conversation. And again, if you're outside of San Francisco, toll free, 866-798-8255. So we've given a little bit of the lay of the land. Where I really want to focus tonight is talk a little bit about what's going on in our arena and what people can or should do to protect themselves. You've both been involved in litigation. I guess the obvious question is, what special things have come up as it relates to cryptocurrency that make cryptocurrency different?
Well, a lot of the law about cryptocurrencies is very unsettled. So what I have a case, without getting into the names of the parties, the issue is whether it was a security and should have been registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission or not. And if it should have been registered, what is the consequences of that? I did an investigation where, fortunately not my client, but some other parties were accused of fraud in connection with offering for sale their initial coin offering of cryptocurrency and had all their assets frozen. So legal issues are just being defined because there's no statute, for example, that Congress has passed that says this is what a cryptocurrency is. The definition has come from the government financial industry regulators, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the Commodities Future Trading Commission, the IRS, the Federal Reserve, giving regulatory guidance, and then the SEC and the Department of Justice and the CFTC bringing legal actions, criminal and civil actions against people they say are violating some of these laws. So like the big one is a cryptocurrency a security like a stock or a bond? Is it an investment in someone else's business that only has value if that business succeeds or fails? That's loosely what a security is under federal law. And if it's a security and it should have been registered, meaning there should have been a description of the risks of the investment that is filed and approved by the government before the investment can be sold or offered for sale or advertised for sale, and it hasn't happened, that's one type of violation. That's called the sale of an unregistered security. There's people paying other people, giving them commissions to find people to invest. That's another violation. There are people saying, oh, I'll create a trading market for you. That's another violation. So all these things are going on right now, and there's a lot of government activity in the United States in this area because a lot of money has been raised. Billions and billions of dollars are being raised. You also have on the more lawful side, venture capital firms and other sophisticated investors jumping in because the blockchain technology has a lot of potential uses and applications that are could be very helpful for businesses around the world. The stock exchange, but the big financial services firms are looking at using their own version of a distributed ledger for keeping track of all stock transactions in the world.
When you say a distributed ledger, can you define that?
Yeah, think of it as a list or a database. But instead of the way most databases work, one company keeps track of the database. A database can be a list of any type of data, but in this case, it's transactions, like a purchase or sale of a Bitcoin, okay, is kept track of on the blockchain. And so it's a database that's maintained by everybody else out there in the world who agrees to do it with their computers. So there's always a copy of it. It's a decentralized database, and it's updated thousands of times a day by people that you might have heard of. They're called Bitcoin miners. And what they do is they're rewarded for helping to maintain the database by being given Bitcoins. And there's a finite number of Bitcoins that can be created. And so all of the cryptocurrencies tend to operate that way, where there's a decentralized database that's floating out there on all these computers all around the world. And then there are people who help maintain the database.
So it sounds like from your description, we were talking before the show about certain areas where certain areas of the state where certain fields of law was like practicing in the Wild West. And it sounds like we're very much in the Wild West as far as the government's involvement, exactly how they define what this is and what people's roles are and how they can get involved in making sure it doesn't get ahead of them.
And what it's worth, whether it's worth anything, right? I mean, because with Intel stock, there's an established market for Intel. You can look up the price. It's considered, economists call it an efficient market. The price is supposed to reflect all public data about it. With a lot of these cryptocurrencies, especially the less well-known ones, there might be two transactions a day. There's no sophisticated people keeping track of them saying they're worth this. There's a lot of fraud because it's unregulated. So there's just a lot of phony claims being made about their value and a lot of manipulation going on in these cryptocurrency exchanges.
And that's where it bleeds into what I do is, you know, you have people that have cryptocurrency, as Chris was saying. It's the easiest way to hide any kind of a community asset if you have it in cryptocurrency, because trying to trace it and to find what the value is of the community is really, really difficult. It's also very easy to use to avoid responsibility with regard to support because, again, it's very speculative. The courts don't know what to do with it. And you got Department of Child Support Services. They certainly don't know what to do with it.
I can think from just where I'm sitting, layer upon layer of problem in a family law case, you have the honest people that may be getting some kind of compensation in cryptocurrency, and yet how in the world do you distribute it? How do you value it? And then you've got the dishonest ones where you have the sleight of hand problem. You'll never be able to find this. Is this the next wave of what we used to see in people moving assets offshore? Now we see it being moved into cryptocurrency. Is that where this is all going?
That's what I think. It's hard enough to trace. I mean, I've got cases where money has been diverted to Cyprus, Russia, various different countries where we know there's no way we're going to be able to trace it there. But at least if the money is originally in the United States and it's in U.S. dollars, I can do what we call a reverse tracing. You do, as Chris was saying, the cryptocurrency, it's all digital. There could be ways. There's no way of really tracing it because it's all within the computers. And so it's really, really easy, especially if somebody's getting a compensation package that includes cryptocurrency, or, as he was saying before, they have a side business that's not quite legal, and so they're using cryptocurrency as the compensation for it. Trying to track that down is going to be almost impossible.
Let me turn it over to Colby in San Francisco. You're on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I have a question. I just wanted to have more of a conversation, I guess, about kind of the crossroads right now of cryptocurrency and the cannabis industry. I was hoping you guys might be able to talk about that a little bit. Just in that the cannabis industry is having a cash problem at this point because they can't deposit their money anywhere. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Colby, hi, this is Chris. I do actually have thoughts on this because I had this issue come up in my practice a couple years ago. If you look at the banking laws in the United States, they're interpreted very strictly. So if you're engaged in conduct that may be illegal under federal law, whether or not it's legal under state law, a federally insured bank cannot have you as a customer and know what you're doing. Now, banks have an obligation under federal law to, quote, know your customer. And so the issue that I had, someone wanted to have an app that created their own cryptocurrency so you could buy marijuana with it. And this was actually before it was fully legalized in California. And it just from a standpoint as an attorney trying to make sure clients don't get in trouble, I saw a lot of red flags with that. And so, yes, these types of currencies are popular with industries that are not, fully compliant from a banking point of view with federal law. And so that's one of the big issues right now because marijuana has been legalized either for personal use or medical use in a majority of the states now. And they have all this cash and they have to know what to do with it. They could be subject to being robbed. They have to pay employees. There are tax issues, which I won't even get into because they're very complicated about what they can deduct and what they can't deduct under the Internal Revenue Code. And so I think some of them have looked at accepting these types of currencies as payment because, A, they don't have to worry about putting it in a bank. It's on this distributed ledger, and they just need the apps to do it. But they still ultimately have to convert it into dollars for people to pay their employees and their suppliers because most people aren't just going to accept cryptocurrencies.
Got it. So is there any reason to not for some of these organizations to not push for that? And how widespread do you think that is at this point with dispensaries and growers using this as a currency?
I think a lot of it's going to be – this is BJ. I think a lot of it also is going to be is how much do they want to go back and forth with the transactions and so forth. But, I mean, the drug cartels were using cryptocurrency even before marijuana. So it's been around longer than we realize. But I think it's going to depend on the size of the business is what I'm saying.
And from my understanding, I don't know how widespread it is. I think a lot of it, there are a lot of practical things like how do you reduce your cryptocurrency, your Bitcoin, into cash? Well, you can do it on an exchange. But then once you get the cash, where do you put it? You have to put it in a bank account. The bank will want to know where you got that money. So they always come back to these issues where they're running into the banking industry or they're dealing in cash.
Right, because the bottom line is you can't go and pay your rent in cryptocurrency. Well, most of the time.
Right.
And so I guess that kind of leads to the next part of that is this, you know, obviously the new wave of laundering money. When you now have your crypto and you want to come back into U.S. dollar, is that – what does that even look like as far as laundering money? And how can you, I guess, circumnavigate that?
I can't give you advice on how to launder money, but in terms of
just to clarify, I said earlier in the show we're not going to give precise legal advice, and I'm going to suggest that my guests probably don't want to give specific illegal advice either.
In terms of, I mean, so one of the original uses of Bitcoin was for engaging in illegal transactions through an eBay of the black market called Silk Road. The founder of it was actually arrested in San Francisco at a library in West Portal, and then wound up going to jail for the rest of his life. That's all he did was accept Bitcoin as his medium of exchange because it was very anonymous. Now, they found a way to trace him back to Silk Road through various details that I won't share with you, but there was some allegations that the federal government had went into Iceland and illegally copied a server and then used that. And then he also was apparently sloppy with his LinkedIn profile, of all things. But in any event, yes, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are perfect for people who want to engage in anonymous transactions. They're risky because their value may fluctuate a lot more than a dollar. And when you're dealing with people in illicit transactions, you have the risk that they're going to rip you off anyway. That's true. I think marijuana dispensaries are looking for it as a way of accepting payment because they can't put all their cash in a bank right now. And so I think that's the attraction there. But again, ultimately, what do? You just pay all your employees with Bitcoin? Or do you pay all your suppliers with Bitcoin? Does PG&E accept Bitcoin for all the energy you need to grow your pot? Or, you know, that you still have to convert it to dollars somehow. And it has to go into a bank to do that, typically. So,
cool. All right. Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
So if I understand correctly, it sounds like what you're saying to Colby is that it's a place to put money and get rid of money, but you're still going to have problems bringing it back.
Right. Right. And even if your source of your income is lawful, you're still going to have to convert it. And so just from a small point, there's a fee you have to pay whenever you sell your Bitcoins to the Bitcoin exchange, right? And then you're going to have to direct them to a bank to deposit the money. So you will set that up when you set up your account.
That would make sense. So you could send money offshore. You can stash it. You can put it in Bitcoin. But at some point, when the money comes back, you still have to account for it, and you can't quite wash it enough. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
Let me turn it to Josh in Palo Alto. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. My question is this. We wanted to help our clients distribute Bitcoin. And so can we accept Bitcoin from them and distribute the Bitcoin in different pieces at different times in the future? Do you see any problem with that in a legal manner?
And again, we're talking broad strokes. Just general principles. We're not giving specific advice. When you talk about your clients and you're assisting them, are you a legal entity or are you and I don't mean as opposed to being illegal, or I guess what type of a service are you involved with that you're helping them?
So it would be, for example, if they had passed away and we wanted to help them distribute their Bitcoin to members of the family in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take a shot at this. I don't see a general problem with that. You can get into issues about whether you're functioning as what's called a money exchange, and that's if you're doing it as part of your business, that you're helping people engage in financial transactions. And so you run into banking laws and banking regulations when you do that. And some of the first Bitcoin exchanges where people would sell or buy Bitcoins, they got into trouble for not complying with rules that apply to banks, like who are your customers, what identification did you demand of them, do you know what their source of income is, those types of things. But in general, if you're just helping a friend or you're helping distribute an estate, I can't think of a particular regulatory problem that comes up on that. Because it's not illegal to own Bitcoin. They're property, they're assets, you can own them. You can hold them for someone else. You know, generally when you talk about Bitcoin, Bitcoin is one thing. The other cryptocurrencies can be a little bit different for reasons I won't get into. But one could be Bitcoin probably is not a security, the short thing. So a lot of the restrictions on securities don't apply to Bitcoins. But most cryptocurrencies, a lot of them are securities because they're being used to raise money for a business. So, you know, if you're steering clear of that, then if you're just helping someone out, distributing it, then I don't see a problem. If you're doing it as a business and you want to make money on it, you might run into these banking rules that apply to money exchanges like Western Union and so forth.
Is somebody going to look to Josh down the road and ask, do you know where the money came from that went into Bitcoin and whether taxes were paid or the like?
Yeah, so that'd be the issue. There were some exchanges that got into trouble, not criminal trouble, but they got fined because they didn't comply with these know your customer rules. So that is a potential area for a for-profit business.
I see. Thank you very much.
Josh, thanks for joining us in Your Legal Rights. I hope that clarified some of your questions. And let me turn it to Greg in Redwood City. Greg, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
I'm starting a startup called Lotto Together, and basically it's like where a bunch of people can play the lottery together, and I have a lot of international players, and so I was going to accept Bitcoin for them to extend funds to participate in the pool. I was wondering if I'd run into a lot of problems with that.
Yeah, potentially. There are laws against online gambling, and so there's federal laws on this. So you'd want to talk to an attorney and give the details of what your business is doing and all that to make sure you're complying with those laws. There have been actions against online gambling and facilities that enable online gambling. So that those are the types of laws that would come to mind that could apply.
Yeah, I was going to say we don't even get to the Bitcoin yet, but even if you do get the licensing.
Right.
But just to be clear, on the online gambling part of it, it is just playing like the Mega and the Powerball, so legal, you know, state-run lotteries. So it's just like some of the lotteries have captains, and you know, the captain runs a pool. So it's not a separate gaming thing. Just to be clear.
Well, both of my guests are shaking their heads. I don't know if this is flying, Greg.
I think Chris and I both agree that, again, we would really strongly urge. I think there's some other legal issues to check with an attorney.
Yeah,
there are issues about having your own little poker game for raising money for a charity. So typically, the police are not busting people for doing it. You know, maybe they're playing poker with their friends. And so, like, when people pool their money in an office to enter the Mega Millions, you know, lottery jackpot, no one's getting arrested. But it doesn't mean there aren't laws that apply to that conduct and that govern it. It just means that it's not being enforced. If you raise your visibility and you're on the internet and you're getting a lot of money in and you're using it to – you're pooling other people's money and you're using it to do Mega Millions and all these other lotteries, then I think – A, you're raising your visibility, and B, there are laws that apply to online gaming and other things that you could be running into.
And the third is that you're obviously going to get some kind of service fee or compensation for it. So again, I think that brings in another layer that you really need to check with a lawyer about.
Yeah.
Again, the Bitcoin part.
The Bitcoin, it could be dollars, it could be Bitcoin. I don't think that changes the equation. The legal issues have to do with the gaming and helping other people for profit gamble, whether it's a lottery or something else.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden here in the studio with my friends Christopher Cook and BJ Fadum, and tonight we're taking a look at cryptocurrency. If you have a question for my guests, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415 841 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the local dialing area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. You're not limited to the spot we may be in our conversation. You could call regarding any question on tonight's topic, which is cryptocurrency, at 866-798-8255, which is exactly what ZZ from San Francisco has done. ZZ, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm super, super interested in blockchain currency and know that just recently in San Francisco, they had a blockchain conference. Additionally, I noticed in the newspaper that President Xi from China is interested in blockchain technology for currency currencies as well. But really what I'm calling about is how ubiquitous the activities that would be considered unsavory. As a direct example, a nonprofit that I know about in San Francisco that handles as a fiduciary agent money for a wide variety of other nonprofits that are all struggling and, you know, their money is very, very committed, was because they were not up to date on their security system in their computers, had their computers taken over by hackers.
Right.
And then their data was held for ransom. And they ended up having, they tried, you know, a myriad of ways and were unsuccessful, as is usually the case. Just like Baltimore had the same issue where all their data was locked up and they were held hostage by the hackers to give up Bitcoin. And it could be Bitcoin, it could be any number of other currencies. And I'll just also mention, because I'd like to get some comments about that, but I'll also mention that I'm on Nextdoor, and on Nextdoor recently, somebody put out, and it was only out there for a few minutes, you know, contact this link and try this new current cryptocurrency called Pi. And it's like, I know there's so many cryptocurrencies, and regardless of the fact that, you know, Bitcoin has been around the longest, the fact is, even on Bitcoin, with the exchanges getting hacked, people were wiped out when the exchanges got hacked. There really seems to be so much volatility, even though there are people making money. I just wanted to get some insight into what you think, you know, how this is going to play out in a futuristic way.
Well, so you point out volatility. The way that you can determine if an investment or something you're purchasing is risky is whether you can make a lot of money on it. The larger the reward, the greater the risk. Here, there's risk because it's unregulated and because there are a lot of unsavory people attracted to this because it's so hard to trace back who they are. The reason why the ransomware people, the hackers you mentioned, that they use that software called ransomware that takes over your hard drives or your system and then encrypts it and won't give you the key unless you pay them in Bitcoin. They want Bitcoin because you can't find them, right? You have better luck trying to trace them back through how they hacked your system than through the Bitcoin payment you made. The Bitcoin payment, you're never going to trace to them unless you can find who they are and you can take their computer and look at it and have a computer forensic person. So, yeah, that's one reason why people use these types of currencies. They're untraceable, really. And then in terms of, yeah, so you're a fiduciary. Should you be putting other the people for whom you're holding their money and trust in things that are harder to trace, that have this type of risk, that a lot of them have extreme price fluctuations day to day? Bitcoin, not as much, but it still goes up and down quite a bit. I think it went from like 8,000 to 9,600 today as an example. And a year ago is at 20,000, right? So that has a what they call in the stock business a large beta, meaning it goes up and down a lot.
Also shows the liability exposure to any of these fiduciaries that are holding any kind of cryptocurrency, because it is so volatile and so it can be attacked so easily, and then you can't find it and trace it. So who's responsible at that point? And as a fiduciary, it's going to be your liability.
Right. And if you're putting a lot of your nonprofit's money in that, then you're probably in breach of your fiduciary duty because of the just because of the volatility alone. But I would also think you're putting it in something that there's no insurance on if it's stolen. And so, yes, there have been hacks of some of these exchanges to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars lost in terms of Bitcoin and Ether. Ether is the second most common cryptocurrency, and that is that had a huge hack. Hundreds of millions of dollars invested in it disappeared. They thought it was unhackable. The whole premise of these cryptocurrencies is they use this very uncrackable encryption scheme to protect the integrity of the database and the anonymity of the participants in the system. So, yeah, I think it's a problem.
I think so, too.
You know, Zizi brought up another interesting issue and brought up the interest of the government of China in Bitcoin in particular, and then more recently in other forms of virtual currency. Wasn't it about a year ago that they took issue with the mere existence of Bitcoin and the whole market fluctuated significantly and suffered a big hit because of it?
Yeah, they banned trading in cryptocurrency. And I read today that they're reconsidering that. But the reason – there's a lot of reasons why they banned it. One, a lot of people were losing a lot of money in it, and governments will sometimes – until they figure out the regulatory framework for something, whether they're going to allow it and regulate it and limit it, they just ban it until they sort it out. And then two, you know, my suspicion is if you're China and you're a semi-authoritarian country, do you really want your citizens to be able to have untraceable currency that's not in any bank that they can use? You know, they monitor all your bank transactions. They put restrictions on currency you can take out of China right now and put into the United States and other countries. Do they really want you in some decentralized banking system with some currency that they can never trace back? And no, they probably don't want that.
Zizi, interesting topics. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
Let me turn it to Colin in Petaluma. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello. I had a question about accountability of who owns the cryptocurrency exchanges and what happens if there's a problem. Who would be held accountable and, like, I don't know. Yeah, my question, I guess.
And there's the problem. That's what we were talking about. Because it is untraceable, it's not regulated, not really registered, it leaves it a big hole. That, you know, who is going to be responsible? But that's what we were talking about, what Zizi raised before, and what Chris and I were talking about. As a fiduciary, you could be held liable to the nonprofits.
Okay, got it.
There are lawsuits going on right now against some of the cryptocurrency exchanges for theft that has occurred when they were maintaining accounts for all these people around the world who were trading Ether or Bitcoin or Ripple or Litecoin, and most of them are not in the United States because they're not registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And if you're trading something that may be a security, you have to be registered with the SEC. So what they do is they set up in the Cayman Islands. They may be operative from some guy's bedroom in San Jose, but they're in the Cayman Islands on paper. And they're usually their account holder agreements require you to submit to jurisdiction of the Cayman Islands or an arbitration in the Channel Islands or some obscure place around the world and prohibit lawsuits and things like that. There are lawsuits going on right now because there's been a lot of money that's disappeared at some of these exchanges. Can you hold them as accountable as you can hold someone in the U.S.? No, it's much harder.
And that's the problem. You may be able to file the lawsuits, but how are you going to get it all back is the problem.
Right.
And I understand Bitcoin was started by someone who is anonymous, and, like, there's no corporate entity to be held liable if I lost money on a security, there's a company that has assets and whatnot that could go into bankruptcy or whatever. But with this, it's like just some anonymous person's idea.
Well, so there's two ways to think about it. Bitcoin was started by there's a person called Satoshi Nakamoto, which may be a real person, maybe a group of people. probably not the real person's name. It's a computer program. And this Satoshi Nakamoto open sourced the software, meaning the code that he wrote or she wrote or they wrote, and let anybody use it. So they're just putting out a computer program. Whether you use it for a good purpose or a bad purpose, you know, they could say, and they didn't sell it, so they didn't enter into a commercial transaction with you. So they probably don't have much liability unless they have some secret code in there that steals every bit of a transaction or does something deceptive that way. These exchanges, you know, their job is to facilitate purchases and sales of cryptocurrencies. And so one of the things they're supposed to do is safeguard what you have at their exchange, you know, essentially on file with them, although it's just computer code that you have on file with them. And if someone gets your encryption key, they can empty out your account, your digital wallet can disappear. That could also happen if you only have it on your iPhone and you don't have it backed up and it gets you drop it and it breaks and it gets crushed and you can't get the data off it. You know, or it gets stolen. You know, everybody was talking about theft of iPhones or your laptop or something like that. So, yes, it's hard to hold anybody accountable if you lose your money. That's why it's unregulated, and that's why it's a high-risk area.
So this individual you described, whether it's an individual or a group with an anonymous, fictitious name, basically, for those that follow sci-fi, this is Skynet of the economy, potentially.
And unfortunately, I know what you're referring to, but in a way it is, because it's so ethereal. You know, it is and it isn't. I mean, you can transfer, you can transact it, but as Chris was saying, it could be gone in a poof of smoke, and good luck trying to trace it or recovering it, and good luck holding anybody responsible for the loss of it, even though they would, and whatever securities they put into their computer. I mean, let's face it, we have the hackers are always going to be able to overcome it at some point.
Yeah, and the unregulated side, the way I put it is, what if your bank wasn't regulated at all? And the only way it was regulated is people's online Yelp reviews, right? And then whether your money is safe or not, whether it's run by crooks or not, was all based on reputation and what you read on the internet. That's essentially what you are right now with these cryptocurrencies.
Colin, thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight we're talking cryptocurrency. There's still a few minutes left if you have questions for my guests. Our phone number to us in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. And as always, any question you have, you don't have to jump in where we are in our conversation, 866-798-8255. We did get a caller who asked me to read the following question. We largely covered some of this with Colin's call, but on a very fundamental level, this caller is asking, what happens to your cryptocurrency, for example, Bitcoin, if it's exposed to harmful circumstances? Does it go up in smoke? Or does it come with some type of a protection, some type of insurance, anything?
Well, there is a protection in a way. So if you think that your cryptocurrency, your Bitcoin, is just some entries on a database, the one protection you do have, I suppose, is that there are millions of copies of this database all around the world. So if unlike if it was like Chris's currency and I have a little book that I put all the buys and the sells of my currency that I invented and then my house burns down, it's gone, that's not going to happen. But there's really nothing else apart from the fact that there's always going to be a copy somewhere. So you have a couple of different types of loss. You have the loss of your ability to access your Bitcoin because you lose the device or laptop or the data on it that gives access to it, or someone else gets access to your computer or device and empties out your account. There's that loss. Then there's the loss in value because it goes up and down because it's very speculative whether it's worth anything. And then, you know, there's that is probably the main risk. And then there's the risk if it's not Bitcoin, something else, there may be the risk of fraud because you're being lied to about what you're buying, at what you think is an investment, and it's not. Because a lot of businesses are doing what they call initial coin offerings to raise money for their operations, and they're selling you cryptocurrencies that only have value if their business succeeds. Well, what if their business fails? Then you have a bunch of stuff you put money in that's worth nothing, just like you would in, you'd lose your investment, just like you do in any kind of failed startup.
And it sounds like it's similar to if you go back to the old mechanism of having the stock certificates. I mean, you lose your stock certificate, that's it. I mean, if you don't have a backup or, you know, and there's no ledger of it, and we've had that in history, we know, we've seen it happen, where if you can't produce your stock certificate, you don't own those shares.
Yeah, people started insuring stock certificates for that reason. So, right. You know, if they used in the old days, the you buy your shares of Xerox, and then they mail it to you if you ask them to, or your brokerage firm could hold it for you. Nowadays, I don't think anybody ever gets their stock certificates mailed of a public company. It's just tracked on at essentially a electronic database that's maintained by the stock exchange. All the brokerage firms subscribe to that, and they essentially settle up the accounts. So the risk of loss in mail or being stolen is reduced from that. That's one of the reasons why they switched to that.
And we don't really have that with the cryptocurrency quite yet.
There could be insurance. You can write insurance on anything. So.
Right. Somebody hasn't developed it yet, but somebody may want to take the risk. But at this point, I think that it's so volatile and the risk is so high, I'm not sure what the premiums would be for some kind of an insurance policy for that.
Yeah, insurance companies like to have a track record so they can quantify the risk that they're insuring against.
So on a separate note, one of the questions we touched on early on was valuation and tracking somebody else. What kind of special problems come up in your practice, BJ, when you're dealing with maybe it's a spouse that's either moved assets or things of that nature?
That's where we're seeing it a lot, and it's becoming a real problem. It's number one, there is the valuation. So it's a constant moving target. What is the valuation? But it also depends on what the cryptocurrency is. I mean, as Chris was saying, if it's Bitcoin or one of the more valued or a cryptocurrency that you can value, but if you get some of these others that are kind of obscure, what is the actual value? And yet it has to be property if it was acquired during the marriage. But then we've got the other problem to it is when one of the spouses receive as their compensation, their earnings, is this cryptocurrency. And I've had a couple of these cases where almost it's entirely in cryptocurrency. And then we have to establish what is the support. And support, like I was saying before, child support is based strictly in California on guideline, and that's based on U.S. dollars. So we would have to then convert what the value is. So let's say we do try and do that, and we convert it to what the U.S. dollars are, and then you establish what the child support is. That's going to be different than the very next day or the very next week. So it is like a moving target, and it becomes very, very difficult. It's also difficult to trace. It's very easy to hide community assets by just putting it into some kind of cryptocurrency.
Let me turn it to Michael in San Francisco. We're really down to the wire as far as time goes, but Michael, let's try. Welcome to your Legal Rights.
Great. Thanks for having me. So I got a question on stable coins. What are they? How are they regulated? And is there a big difference from a risk perspective versus Bitcoin-type cryptocurrencies?
I'm sorry. You said what coins? I didn't hear your first.
Stable coins. So the question is, what are they? How are they regulated as compared to Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies? And what is the risk factor versus Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies?
So is stablecoin just another cryptocurrency? There's many, many varieties, so I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, I haven't heard that cryptocurrency either.
Yeah. But if it's a cryptocurrency, they all have kind of, in general, the same risks. The more widely held they are, you know, they're less risky because their markets for valuing them are a little better established. But if it's another form of decentralized distributed database or distributed ledger type currency, so I could create one if I want. I could download from Ethereum Foundation's website the software to create my own cryptocurrency. So if it's one of these types of things, I'm not familiar with stable currency. If you give me more of a description, I might be able to help you more.
Yeah, so running out of time, so let me just explain. So let's say it's a gold-backed stable coin, mm-hmm. and it trades as a cryptocurrency, but it's backed by gold.
Okay, yeah. No, I'm familiar. I've heard of that. Okay, so, you know, there was actually a case that the SEC just brought recently over security-backed – they're called security – based swap agreements, which are contracts written on bitcoins. Well, in this case, they were securities-based swaps agreements or derivatives. So they're a contract written on something else. So, you know, in theory, an economist would say if they're backed by an asset that has a tangible value and a tangible marketplace, one of the advantages they would have is you could value them more easily, because if they're exchangeable into a certain pound of ounce of gold, then that they have something. And that's one of the solutions that some people are looking for in creating these types of currencies, is to try to tie them to something else more directly that has tangible value.
Got it. Very good. Thank you.
Michael, thank you for joining us. We are essentially out of time. I'd like to give each of you less than a minute for any closing thoughts. Take about 45 seconds. BJ?
Again, I think it's something that we're moving towards, and we have to be aware of it, but it is very volatile. It's unstable. But with regard – it's bleeding into all areas of the law. We're seeing it, and I think you touched on it, Jeff. It's the Wild West right now, and it's creating an area of Wild West in criminal law, family law, and actually civil litigation. What's the liability of these fiduciaries?
Yeah, I think – it's just the future. We're kind of at the beginning of this, and there are going to be many, many more cryptocurrencies. Facebook right now is trying to develop their own cryptocurrency. And there's also going to be a lot of government intervention. I think ultimately there are going to be statutes that Congress or other countries pass to help provide better guidance about what you can and can't do. The reason why people like them now is there's no regulation, so there's no government scrutiny, or at least not as much. And so that's why they're popular. So they're very risky, and as a result.
And someday in the future, maybe there will be more formalized exchanges and business, and maybe somewhere for us all to go with less risk. But for today, think of dot-coms,
yeah.
1995.
Right, exactly.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we've been discussing various legal issues and just the world of cryptocurrency. With me in the studio tonight, Christopher Cook of Murphy, Cook, and Cobrick, with offices in San Mateo and San Francisco, and BJ Fadum from the law offices of BJ Fadum and Associates, with offices in San Jose and Santa Rosa. Chris, BJ, let me thank both of you for joining us tonight.
Thank you again, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Jeff.
Again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. For production assistant Martin McLean, and at the controls, Joanne Marr. And most of all, our thanks to you all for listening. I'm Jeff Hayden. Thank you and have a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.